This is London Calling.
The Queen is dodgy. I mean, they say there are only two certainties in life. Death and taxes. Not if you're the Queen. What are these, the Paradise Papers? They've revealed that about 10 million quid of the Queen's private money, it's our money, where do you think she got it from? Of the Queen's private money was invested offshore. It's put into funds in the Cayman Islands and Bermuda by the Duchy of Lancaster, which provides the Queen with an income and handles investments of her £500 million private estate. Private, guess who pays for them? The taxpayer-funded British monarchy is investing offshore to avoid paying tax. How wrong is that? Meanwhile, people are having a go at Vodafone and Starbucks and Google and all the others, and the Queen's on the fiddle. She's a direct recipient of tax and won't even pay it. And she's also put money into the rent-to-buy retailer Bright House. Now, they've got a lot in common with the royal family. They've been accused of exploiting the poor. The Queen gets £82.2 million a year from the taxpayer in a thing called the Sovereign Grant. We also kick in another £4.5 million a year to pay for the Queen and the royal family's official travel. The royal train last year cost £288,697, even though last year it only made 14 trips. She loves spending our money fixing up her property. She spent £1.2 million last year replacing the doors on the orangery at Windsor Castle. That directly came from taxpayers. It's not just her, of course. We paid £154,000 for Charles and Camilla to use Cam Force One, the official government plane, to visit Italy, Romania and Austria. Now, Republic, which is the people who campaign for an elected head of state, what a crazy idea that might be, they published a report on royal expenses. And they said, once security, because none of that's counted, security and the police and all, once security and other costs are included, the annual bill for the monarch is around £345 million a year. So it turns out the Queen's got nothing against spending tax. She just doesn't like paying tax. So death and taxes. Death and taxes, the only certainties. Not true for her, because she's a tax avoider. And she's cheated death for 91 years as well. Could that be because our tax has also paid for her to have the finest physicians while we struggle to get a doctor's appointment? I'm Graham Mack and Daphne's on the phone. And be careful with me, Daphne. I'm not having a good time. I went to the supermarket yesterday. It was a disaster.
Was it?
It was an epic fail. Epic fail.
Really?
Epic fail. I hate supermarket shopping. Every step of the way, I got it wrong. Julie, I checked the list, which is an app on the phone that, you know, Julie keeps it up to date. I keep it up to date. I think there were 25 items on the list. Anyway, I also wanted to get the car washed. And there's a place at this supermarket where they'll wash your car while you do your shopping. But I'm usually too quick for them and I come back and they haven't finished the car and I have to hang around. But they've also got a cafe. So I thought, brilliant. I'll have something to eat for my lunch. And then I'll go around the shops and that'll kill the time so that when I'm done, I can just go straight to the car and go home. Right? Good plan?
Yep.
Good plan. So I get there and I think, well, what do I have? And I'm a really fussy eater because I don't eat meat. I only eat fish. I hate vegetables. I'm a real problem. So
you can go shopping then and then I hardly eat anything.
Well, anyway. So I get to this cafe and I look down the menu because I'm looking for fish and chips. That's normally my go-to. I didn't see it there. They probably had it. I don't know. I didn't see it. But I saw they did margarita pizza, which is just cheese on pizza. And it was £6. And I thought, well, that's all right. I'll just have a thing. I'm thinking this must be an individual pizza, right? So I ordered that. They said, oh, you'll have to wait. So I had to wait. I said, I had just a glass of water because I don't like drinking sugary drinks too much. Anyway, so they had like a water thing that was free. So I'm sitting there drinking my water. I'm looking at stuff on my phone. And they shouted over. They said, margarita pizza. I came back. I'm telling you, this thing was 15 inches across. This was like a wagon wheel in a box. This was just a giant pizza. So for just me, like it could have, four people could have had an evening meal out of this thing. So good on them, £6. That's great value, but it's a problem for me. Now, right, so I managed to make my way through half of this giant pizza and I left half a pizza. That's just wrong on so many levels. People starving in Africa and all the rest of it.
Oh.
And I didn't know what to do and I'm there on my own and so I just threw it out. You know, you have the bin at the end where you throw your...
Couldn't you take it home and have it with a salad?
Well, I couldn't. What am I going to do with it? I can't take it around the super. I'm going around the supermarket now. I can't take it around the supermarket. It's a giant box, right? Okay. I can't walk around with it. And I can't go and put it in a car because the car's being blinking washed.
Oh, right.
So I'm in trouble. So I had to throw it out. And that's just wrong.
What a waste.
What a waste. Yeah. Yes. What a waste, right? So then I get to, now, Julie said she's rejigged the list so that the most important things are at the top. And number one at the top is kitty litter. And so kitty litter comes in a giant sack, for about £9, this giant sack. So I got this giant sack. I've got this. You know, I don't use a trolley. I go around with a basket. When the basket's too heavy, I'm done because I don't have to carry it. So I get this giant sack of kitty litter. Next thing on the list is toilet rolls. So I get this bag of like 8 toilet rolls. So I'm trying to juggle that. I've got this hippie bag as well that she makes me take so I don't get a thing back. Well, there's nothing, so far, nothing I've bought will even fit in the hippie bag. Then the next thing on the list is kitchen towels. So I buy a pack of 8 of them and that's it. I can't carry anything else. Well, the 25 things on the list and all I managed to get was 3. So I defeated. I then went to the wrong till. I went to one that looked like it should have a human being because I had the conveyor belt and everything, but it was a robot. So that messed me about. There's too many buttons to push, but I still managed to get that. I get to the car. Thankfully, the car has been washed and they did a really nice job. So I paid for that and I tipped the fella for doing a nice job. I get all the stuff in the boot. I drive home. I've failed. I get home and then I've got my bag, my work bag to carry and this giant kitty litter and this giant thing of toilet rolls and this giant thing of kitchen towels and got virtually nothing off the list. 3 things off a 25 person list. I get that. I go for a sleep. I wake up. Julie comes home from work from 6 o'clock and she says, oh, the football's on tonight. Did you get any goodies? I'm like, get any goodies? She said, well, that's why you were going to the supermarket on that night. I said, yeah, it is, so we can watch the football and eat Doritos. I didn't get any Doritos. She said, well, you better get back out there and go to the other supermarket, the one near us, and go back. So then she sent me back out. So I went back out and I'm going through the list and one of her cordials, I rang her twice because I didn't know what damn cordials she wants. I can't find anything in there. I think I've got all the little bits and pieces. I see great bargain, box of Maltesers for £1. So I get 2 of those. So then I get home and I go, there you go. And I unload everything. And she says, where's the Doritos? I said, I forgot to get them. It was a double epic fail.
Well, team win. That's the thing.
It what?
Did your team win?
Yes, we did, 3-0. But that's not the point. You asked me how the shopping went. Once again, it was a disaster. It's always a disaster. Never send me to the supermarket.
Well, there's always next week.
Yeah, there's always next week. She'll probably send me back today. I went twice yesterday.
Gordon Bennett.
Are airlines cutting too many corners to save money? If someone in my car hasn't fastened the seatbelt, a light comes on and a beeping starts that doesn't stop till everyone's belted up. On the plane back from Iceland recently, I noticed that planes don't have that light and beeper. Just before you take off, the flight attendants have to walk down the aisle and check out everybody's crotch. That's the same system on every flight I've ever been on. Why is that? The technology used in planes these days is incredible. They're fly-by-wire, computer-controlled, glass-cockpitted technological wonders linked to global positioning satellites. They can land in thick fog, but they can't tell if everybody's seatbelt is fastened. Do Boeing and Airbus not have the seatbelt light and beeper as a factory option? Or is that only available on the Gear model? And the planes I've been on are all the bog standard version. Well, that would explain why the masks that drop down in the unlikely event of depressurization look so cheap. I've often wondered why the only thing standing between me and certain death is a plastic cup, a freezer bag, and a bit of knicker elastic. I see another survey's come out that states the bleeding obvious. This is one about job interviews. It says the thing we're most scared of at an interview is not getting the job. Mick, you've been on an interesting job interview.
Yeah, I had one when I first left school, and yeah. It was like a family business, and I sat there with my suit on for the first time, sitting with my suit on, really nervous about this job interview, and then in the background I could hear this couple, and they were shouting and screaming at each other, and I thought, oh, this doesn't sound very good. And then they said to me, she came in and she said, I'll come into the office. So I sat in the office. And then the bloke came in and then they started screaming and shouting at each other in this office while I was sitting there before the interview.
Yeah.
And then he got up and walked out. And then she looked at me. Then she got up and she walked out and she slammed the door. And I was sitting in this office for 10 minutes in silence. Nothing happened.
Right.
So I got up and walked out in the end.
And that was the end of it. You decided, I don't want to work here.
She didn't even ask my name or anything. She just asked me to come and sit down.
Yeah.
Had an argument.
Yeah.
He steamed out. She steamed out. And then I just sat there. So I thought,
from time to time, you do something and find yourself asking the question, does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Badger.
It was only yesterday that reminded me. I left the flat, and in the hallway, the guy was doing the cleaning and mopping the floor and that. And I said to him, oh, I thought you came on a Tuesday. He said, it is Tuesday. I was like, oh, right.
There's a cemetery in Russia for robots. The robot cemetery. It's for people to take their gadgets that they became attached to that died, and they're grieving for them. What gadget have you had that you kind of, when it died, you really felt something deep inside? A feeling that can only be described as grief. Kev.
Certainly has to be the original Sega Mega Drive when that finally came up the ghost.
Now, the Sega Mega Drive, this was basically a computer game.
It was, but it was my first one, and you had, like, Sonic the Hedgehog and all those classic games, and, you know, kids today, they don't appreciate how cool they actually were. 2D games.
And what happened to it? What killed it?
I think maybe it getting water poured on it, amongst other things.
Right. It was a drowning death. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Oh, and you've mourned its passing. And if there was a robot cemetery, you would have taken it there, and you would have had a full service for it and give it a bit of a
sign. Certainly. Does that make me crazy?
Does that make me crazy? Pete's on the phone. You're a gas fitter.
Oh, some time ago, I was working. And we were doing maintenance in properties, and I worked in a whole street and serviced 9 boilers in the wrong street.
Oh, no!
Yeah, local authority, and the thing about it is every single person let me in.
Of course they did. You're the gas fitter, come to service their boiler. Come on in, you want a cup of tea? Come on in!
Yeah,
wrong
9 boilers. Wrong street.
Oh, thanks for sharing, Pete.
No problem.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I still can't get over there being a robot cemetery in Russia. This is where you take your gadgets that you know when they die, and you're really grieving for them. So, talking about the gadgets you've had that when they went, you really felt it. And Darren, you used to have one of these, a stylophone.
Yeah. Well, I wanted one for my 10th birthday, and I didn't get one, so I was pretty gutted. But I got one that same year on the Christmas.
And
within a week, I ran out of 3 batteries. You know them little square things that you can put on your tongue?
Oh, little 9 volts, yeah.
Yeah, them little one things, yeah, and... Yeah, and I drove my mum mental with it, in the end, apparently, right, it got chewed up by one of the dogs, because we had two Alsatians, Husky and Sabre.
Right.
But you could clearly see, that a hammer had gone through. I mean, you know, a 10 I might have been like, yeah, but you could clearly see a hammer had gone through it, like, yeah, and I weren't sure whether it was my mum or whether it was my idiotic brother, like, yeah, but at the end of the day, like, it was a case of bottom lip syndrome, you know, I didn't cry.
Oh, no.
It was, like, yeah, I was gay, and I waited so long for it, and then I only had it just over a week. Yeah,
well, clearly somebody had had enough of it after a week. Yeah.
Well, I reckon it was my mum.
Yeah.
Right, who bought it in the first place.
Yeah, it could well have been.
Oh. Yeah, you knew.
You can legally buy explosives in Britain. On November the 5th every year, we celebrate Bonfire Night. It commemorates a failed attempt to blow up the Houses of Parliament in 1605. We set off fireworks and burn effigies of one of the terrorists, a bloke called Guy Fawkes. Well, every year, around 1,000 people visit hospitals for treatment of firework-related injuries. Half of the injured are aged under 18. Since 1996, 4 people have been killed in firework accidents in the UK. I lived in Australia for almost 7 years, and where I lived in New South Wales, the sale of fireworks to the public is illegal. The best fireworks I've ever seen were in Sydney, on the harbour, on New Year's Eve. There's no way that any of the more than 1 million people that watch them every year could put on anything like that kind of display in their own backyard, even if they were allowed to buy fireworks in New South Wales. As with most things, Australia is way ahead of Britain on this one. Controlling the sale of fireworks reduces the number of injuries. Britain does have one advantage, though, over Australia. The time when Australians are most likely to set off fireworks is New Year's Eve, which down there is in the middle of summer. In Britain, November the 5th is in the middle of winter, which does reduce the number of casualties because it usually rains. Could you tell the difference between an unexploded World War II bomb and a zucchini? Well, a bloke in Germany couldn't. He found one in his garden, ended up calling in the police and the army. It was a case of mistaken identity. You've had this, Joe.
A friend of mine mistook something for something else.
Oh, yes. What did they think it was? Well, oh, just tell me the story.
A few Christmases ago, we were walking down the road. We were walking his dog, and at one of the homes had put out an almost life-size nativity scene with the Virgin Mary and Joseph sitting opposite each other. But it was rather shadowy, and this friend said to me, look at that couple there playing cards in this freezing weather.
Prince Charles is just as dodgy as the Queen. Documents called the Paradise Papers have shown that the Queen has been hiding money in offshore accounts so she can dodge tax. Now those papers show that Prince Charles has been up to no good as well. The papers show that Prince Charles campaigned to alter climate change agreements without letting on that his estate, the Duchy of Cornwall, secretly bought shares in a firm in Bermuda that would benefit from the changes to the rules. And, like his mum, Prince Charles is a tax dodger. His Duchy of Cornwall is just a giant tax loophole anyway. The Duchy doesn't pay any tax. It doesn't have to. For example, the Duchy owns the land that Dartmoor Prison is on. Dartmoor pays $2 million in rent to the Duchy for the use of the land. No tax is paid on that $2 million. Why doesn't the Duchy pay capital gains and corporation tax like any other business? Because it's owned by a royal. It's more proof that the royals are all crooks. Prince Charles is always on about the need to address climate change and keeps telling us to cut our carbon footprint. But he's got one of the biggest carbon footprints of all. He told us to mark Earth Hour by switching off our lights to save energy. This is the bloke who uses a royal helicopter to fly to his royal engagements and polo matches that he wants to watch. He lives in 6 houses which are spread out from Romania to Wales. Now, some people think things will change when the younger royals take over. Well, Prince William is just as dodgy as his dad. He's always going on about conservation and the importance of wildlife. He must think we don't know about the 250 pheasant, duck and partridge that him and his friends shot at their grandmother Queen Elizabeth's Sandringham estate to celebrate his brother's birthday. A day after going hunting for wild boar and deer in Spain, he appeared in a video with his father, Prince Charles, condemning illegal hunting of endangered species. Nothing much has changed in Britain since Oscar Wilde wrote, "And what sort of lives do these people who pose as being moral lead themselves? My dear fellow, you forget that we are in the native land of the hypocrite." Sheep can recognise faces. Cambridge University were able to train sheep to identify the faces of the actors Jake Gyllenhaal, Emma Watson and the former US President Barack Obama. Let's cross now live to Yorkshire. Jane, you disagree with this latest research. Why's that?
We breed sheep.
You actually breed sheep?
Sheep farmer.
Okay, now, study by
Cambridge... We breed Dale's breads. Strange enough, Dale sheep.
Study by Cambridge University shows that sheep can
twaddle.
That can recognise celebrity faces.
I've never heard so much twaddle. Sheep are dim. I'm sorry, sheep. It's not nice.
So you're saying sheep cannot recognise Barack Obama in a time of crisis or Emma Watson?
Sheep are sheared.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Every year, they don't even recognise themselves and they fight because they don't know who they are.
They don't recognise each other?
No, they don't. Honestly, when you get them in a pen, you clip them, you dip them, you do various things to them, worm them, copper them, whatever, put them back out, and there's all sorts of fights breaking out because they don't, that the best friend, they don't recognise. They do have social units when they're hurt, when the coats have grown back again, you know, they know who they are.
But they don't have the skill to recognise faces. You dispute this study from Cambridge University.
No, they recognise the sound of a bucket with sheep nuts in.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, but that's it.
They don't even recognise each other when they've been shorn.
Okay.
So, Graham, I've never heard such twaddle from Cambridge.
See, they should have just called you in the first place, shouldn't they?
They should have just called me. Or Farmer Mick, who's really pretty good with them.
All right, thank you very much, Jane, for clearing this up.
All right, bye.
Cheers, Jane, bye. You don't have to know much about English soccer to win money on it. There's a lady who got fed up of her husband watching football and it not being very interesting to her. She thought, well, to make it interesting, I'll have an accumulator bet. I'll pick just a load of teams just from their names and back them to win. She put £1 on and won £500,000. That's around $700,000. And Bonzi, you played a long shot and it came in.
Yeah, I'd done a job for someone one day. I only wanted 20 quid of my petrol, which is probably what I used, and he gave me 50.
Wow.
Tried to give it back, he wouldn't take it anyway, so. Wow. In the morning, when the missus woke up, she said, "What's that on the table?" I said, £50 note. So I thought, that's what you give me, so. So I said to her, "Right, what I'll do, I'll put a tenner on yours, and you can have the rest."
Right.
So I did this, and there was a horse running. I only looked for the names, called Sue's Saviour.
Right.
And that was her name, Sue. I thought, I'll be your saviour. I'll put it on there.
Yeah.
And it came in, I won 50 quid.
It came in at like 5-1, did it?
Yeah. I could not believe it. I thought, right, 100 quid in 2 days, not bad.
Bonzi, thanks very much.
Cheers, buddy.
Millions of Brits admit to having a secret must-see talent, but most of us are too shy to show off our amazing party trick. You think, oh yeah, but then when you get into the party tricks that people can do, they're pretty lame, like peeling an orange and it all coming off in one piece, and shuffling cards. Admittedly, juggling was on there, but come on. What is your special talent, your secret talent, or your party piece? Linda?
There was a guy on the TV on the one show, I don't know, a couple of years ago or something, And he was an old bloke, and he was really good at whistling. And I often thought to myself, maybe I should write into the One Show and go on there and do a duet with him. But I never, ever really did it.
So what I'm tune do you like to whistle?
I do it? Anything, really.
Well, give us an example. Whistle something for us.
I don't know. I do like... Oh, I can't, what's the name? I can't think of it. Like Prison Walkways, or it's one of those ones, you know.
How's it go?
I can if you like.
Whistle me a few bars.
Go on. Hang on, I just have to swallow.
See if I can name that tune from your whistling.
Go on, hang on a minute. Right. Oh dear, now I've got I've got the spotlight now, you see, I'm getting keyed up, you know. No, it's like, but nerves, mate, nerves, you know.
Yeah.
Right, we'll try. Just relax. Breathe in, as they say, you know, breathe, whatever.
All right, Linda, you've got the part. Yeah, I think the One Show should definitely have you on. Yeah, as Whistling Linda. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, all right, thank you very much.
Okay.
Voice actor Jim McCabe's on Skype from Philadelphia. How are you going?
I had a great session yesterday. I've been working with a new broadcast narration coach.
Oh, really? So this is... Now, most of the work you do, last time I spoke to you about this, you said most of the stuff you do is audiobooks.
I haven't done an audiobook in ages.
Oh, right. Well, I'm really not up to speed here. So what's most of the stuff you do now?
I haven't done audiobook work because I haven't auditioned for it.
I see.
In a while.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because the money's never really been in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the voiceover world, it's the most amount of work for the least amount of pay.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of work, a whole book.
And when I there's a website, acx.com, which is audiobook exchange, exchange for the and it's all run by Amazon.
Right.
Which owns audible.com.
Right.
Which is the biggest provider of audiobooks.
Yeah.
And when I did the audiobook work that I did, it was under a system called royalty share, which means when I first started doing it, the author, Amazon took 50% off the top.
Right. Done. Yeah.
And the author and I shared 25% of whatever the royalties.
So, right. So it wasn't a flat fee. It was the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
Well, and that I still sounds get, right.
Right. Right. Nowadays I get, because it's been 3-4 years since I've done an audiobook. I still get a check every month.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of the royalty share, I got $100 per finished hour.
Oh, I see. Right.
As a
session fee kind of thing.
As what's called a stipend.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of how well the book did on sales, at least I was guaranteed $100 a finished hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, fine. I was okay with that. Since then, Amazon now takes 60%.
Oh.
So the author and the narrator, we split then 40%. So we get 20 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
And the stipend is basically, it's gone.
Oh, right. So you've got to judge whether this book's going to sell or not before you read the copy, before you decide to do the work. If you go, no, this is lame, the history of plumbing, no, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
So
the stipend is gone.
Mm.
The royalty share is still there.
Yeah.
And there was also all right, you could bid on, I'll do this for just a flat fee.
Yeah.
$100 a finished hour, $200, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I looked last week, and that's basically gone too.
And why is this? Is this because more people are doing this now? Because the technology lets them do it from home, so it's become more competitive? Is it a supply and demand thing?
I don't think so. I think it's just I think it's just Amazon and Audible wanting more money.
Oh, it's just greed.
Yes, good old fashioned greed. Purely greed.
Wow. So what's your bread and butter now?
Ah, just little. Actually, last week, I was hired for 5 projects, all of which, was UK voice.
Was UK voice. So you had to debung on your UK voice, but was it for UK projects or USA projects?
Some of both.
Really? What projects do you do for UK?
Actually, and one, I did one Monday for a company in the Netherlands.
And they wanted an English voice to speak in English for something in Holland. Oh, wow. But they didn't want you to sound Dutch.
No. They wanted UK.
Wow. So it's all changed. So you've got this broadcast voiceover coach.
Yes. I've done some actual broadcast narration work.
Yes. So what is this like? Is this for like?
What I noticed it was always it's the same. I don't know if you know the actor Liev Schreiber.
No.
He does a lot of. He voiced a series for over here for the History Channel, America: The Story of Us.
Right. So one of the few programs on the History Channel not about Nazis.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So it's a lot of that. So a lot of the docu thing, is it? Yeah.
A lot of the what I did something for ESPN. Called about the NFL draft.
They wanted an English voice for that, or is this different?
That was the US. Yes,
right. They didn't want an English voice for that.
No, not for that one. No.
I was going to say because they'd lose a bit of credibility.
One of the times I wasn't hired. Right.
Give me a little bit of that one then. What was that one sound? What that one sound like?
It was just a. Basically an omniscient, unaffected, just very flat narrator.
Give me a line from that. What'd that sound like?
I could probably play something back for you.
Yeah, that'll do.
It's been said that football isn't enough like life. But if your measure is the hearts of 100 men, whose lives will never be the same because of a simple game, maybe it's life that isn't enough, like football.
Oh, that's good. That is good. Oh, yeah. That is very good. I like that. I like that. Yeah. Oh, I could see that. Wow.
Yeah, so everything was, it was that same sort of just that unaffected.
Yeah.
It's very straightforward. And I'm working with this coach.
Mm-hmm.
Who was a voice talent himself, a guy named, his name's Tom Pinto.
Mm-hmm.
He's been doing this for 20 some odd years.
Yeah.
30, 40 years. He's been doing it for quite a bit.
Yeah.
And just I started working with him to get out of that same staccato, you know, here we are, we're doing this, we're doing this, we're doing this, we're doing this sort of thing. And I'm going to get a new broadcast narration demo.
Right.
And I had a tracking session with him yesterday.
Yeah.
And my God, was it fun.
Really? So how does this work? You're in Philly, and is he with you, or is he somewhere else?
He's outside of San Francisco.
Oh, really? There's a whole time difference going on here.
Again, it's all over Skype.
Right. And does he sends you some copy to read and critiques your delivery?
Yeah. And well, I've been working with him. I think that was I started working with him, you know, it was a couple of months ago, and it's one, you know, one session a month, maybe two sessions a month. And then he's gotten to know me and I've gotten to know him. And so he sends different copy. Okay. Let's see if this can, let's work this copy. Let's work this. And it's all different flavors.
Hmm.
And then just then settling a nuance here. Okay. Give me this flavor and then give me a touch of a bit of compassion. But still the authority and a touch of this. All right. Give me a hint of this. Okay. Fine. And yesterday was the demo will be 6 or 7 pieces, about 15 seconds each.
Right.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so we worked on 4 yesterday, and we'll do 4 a week from Friday.
So there's all sorts of light and shade in there, a lot of variety.
Yeah.
So then you post that on your website, and did you post it on other websites as well, like voiceover website?
Well, places? I'll post it on websites, but also I'm going to send it, and the big thing is to get another agent. Or a better agent.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah, one that's more heavyweight, that deals with more heavyweight clients. Like, I'm guessing the movie studios. Is that where the big money is?
Well, the big money, but that's all done in L.A.
Oh, is it? They don't do that with down the line there. They actually still do those in person, do they, in a studio?
You mean any sort of...
In a world, cartoon? You know,
like,
you know,
film.
No, no, I mean the ones where they do the trailers for the movies. In a world,
that's all done by probably 6 people.
Wow, right. So each studio has their go-to guy.
No, it's literally 6 people in the world.
Oh, really? That does the lot.
I'm not kidding. Yes, it's wow. It's far. 5 or 6.
Right. So that's a basically closed club.
Yeah.
And what about animation then? Cartoon?
That's all done. That's strictly all done in LA.
Is it? Right.
Nowadays, it's like any movie, that's you need an A-list actor.
Yeah.
To get the audience.
A known voice, yeah. I listened to an interview. I was listening to Adam Carolla's podcast the other day, and his guest was Tim Allen. And Tim was talking about doing the stuff for Toy Story. And he was in the room on his own. And the...
Hey, it's all done on your own.
But he couldn't even... Like, Tom Hanks wasn't even down a line. The engineer was feeding him the wood, and he was reacting. Yeah.
Talking to you.
Yeah. That must be. That's when you really know you're good if you can do that. And then when they splice it together, it's dialogue.
It's all done like that. It's rare.
Right. So they're never in the room together.
No.
The actors on the wow. Doesn't seem right. he said when it came to Toy Story 3, I think it was, the guy said to him, you know, we've got most of this already from the other movies. We really only need like a couple of lines here and there, but I'll get you to do the lot. Because you think about what Buzz Lightyear has to say is not. They've already got most of it. Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating world. Well, good luck with that. Getting the better agent. And how does that work?
A better agent, and then to do more documentaries.
Right. That's where you want to go. Yeah.
You know, which is more, okay, this is a 7-part series. Here's a 4-part series.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which would be great.
Yeah.
You know, to do more of that. But yesterday's tracking session, the four pieces were so different.
Mm.
And it's really tapping into, okay, so let's get into this mode now. Let's get into this mode now.
Mm.
And it, as I haven't done any acting in ages,
mm.
you know, aside from voice work, but it was just a fun hour.
Why was it so much fun?
Because it's a challenge, and it's something, you know, it's what I love to do. You know, you love doing anything to do with the radio.
Yeah.
Radio.
Yeah.
I love to do anything to do with voiceover.
Yeah. Wow. And do you have to now I've done limited voiceover on radio stations. You read commercials here and there, and promos and stuff. So I don't know what I'm talking about. But there's a very good radio consultant. He's getting on a bit now, called Dan O'Day in Los Angeles. And he had a cassette. This is how long ago this was, of personality principles of how to be a better presenter. And, you know, when you start out when I started out in very small radio stations in Australia, you do everything, including voice most of the ads on the station. In fact, most of your day is taken up, reading commercials, and you have to get good at just finding some kind of neutral way of just doing them, just to get loads of them out there. And, he said you've got to find the love in the scene. And what he was talking about was like, if you were reading a commercial about riding a bike, you have to feel the wind in your hair and all that when you're reading it. I mean, is that part of it, or is that an old hat way to...
Oh, no, that's how I do it.
Oh, really? Oh, that really is still valid. There's not like an old... That's not the way they used to do it. You know. Dan was spot
it's still,
on there.
That's always going to be the way it's done.
Wow. Right. And that makes a difference, just putting yourself in. It's something I've used, and it makes it easier to read. I'll tell you that, because we do a lot now for meal deals, you know, on the radio station. Go to the website and click this and get this deal on the meal. And, you know, steak cooked to perfection with sauteed potatoes. And I always try and imagine the food and the smell of it and stuff before I read it. So that I'm actually getting there then with that. I'm on the right track.
Yeah, you're there.
I'm on the right track with that. Wow. So that is how the game is played. That is how it's done.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
Wow. Wow. Hey, well, that's really good news that at least one of the things I do, I know what
you're not just reading copy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And you're seeing the food or your taste. Ah, ooh.
Yeah.
Ah, that mushroom. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah, it's voiceover, but it's acting. So
yes.
what do you do when you're act? When you act, you've got to do the same thing. What's your objection?
Yeah.
What's your objective? Why? Who are you talking to? Why are you talking to them? Where are you?
Yeah. 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 Who are you talking to?
Are you talking to a child, or are you talking to an adult? That's going to affect what your speech is.
Yeah, in radio, that because each radio station has a target demographic, and that is something you have to be aware of when you're just chatting on the radio. Is who am I talking to? Because like if you're on a rock station and you're talking to 25 to 54 males, you're going to talk differently to if you're on a more, you know, adult contemporary station where it's 25 to 34 females, you know. So you do have to be able to switch from one or the other depending on, you know, I sound very different on BBC Radio Merseyside on my Sunday show to how I do on Bob FM in the home counties, because the Bob audience is a totally different audience. The Radio Merseyside audience are much older. And they're also from the north of England, which has different sensibilities to the south. So, yeah. So, right. So, all right. How about that? So, there's a lot of crossover there, isn't there?
There is.
You've never fancied radio?
I never thought of radio because I was always, you know, theatre or film, right. You know.
Yeah.
I always went that way.
You're an actor, yeah.
First,
yeah.
And then came to voiceover just because I was, you know, as I was in the Merchant Marines.
Yeah.
It's tough to do theater.
Yeah.
I'm away for 75 days and home for 75 days.
Yes.
to be able to find something that's going to be up.
Yeah.
That's auditioning, rehearsing, and then up.
Yeah.
In the 75 days I was home, impossible.
Yeah. And not much call for it on board either.
Yes, yes. And you can't just, just phone it in, literally. Yeah. Can you phone it in? No, yeah. You can't.
And the ship's company very rarely put on a show.
No.
You know, yeah, we're doing Macbeth down in the boiler room this evening, if you're interested. We're looking for a... We still have some casting to do.
And now on the main deck, we're doing some Ibsen. I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. So I see how you got
there. So I came to just basically, I want to do some sort of acting stuff.
Yeah.
And with limited amount of time, you know, anything that, okay, here's an hour of my time. You give me an hour of your money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how I came to voiceover work.
Plus, the money you must be saving on makeup alone must be making it worth it. And having to,
yeah, and it's money, and it's acting,
yeah,
but none of the memorization.
Okay, yeah, you can read it out.
You always have the copy in front of you.
None of the study. Yeah. Yeah. I'm supposing the next thing, if you could crack it, but there isn't much call for it, especially on your side of the Atlantic, would be radio plays. Would be lovely to do, because there's no memorizing, but you are properly acting. I mean, they still do that here. We have a radio station here, which is actually the most listened to radio station in the UK, BBC Radio 4. And that does a lot of plays. And there's another version of it. There's not an online and DAB version of it called Radio 4 Extra, which is only plays. That's all it is. It's all the Radio 4, because Radio 4 has got news and current affairs and phone-ins and stuff and plays. But Radio 4 Extra is only the plays. But Radio 4 itself has a daily soap opera called The Archers, which is incredibly popular. It's about a farming family.
Yeah, sure. I know this. I know it. Yeah.
You know the Archers, yeah. So there are people who work as actors, as actors, and you can go and watch them. They record it in, or they used to. I don't know if they still do. They used to record it in Birmingham, in the middle of the town centre. There's the BBC studio there in a studio called the Mailbox. And if you go there at the right time on the right day, you can watch through the glass the Archers being recorded.
That's great.
Yeah, that would be fun, wouldn't it? I'm guessing. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah. The closest I ever got to that was something very, very short. In Britain, we have the every Christmas we have pantomime, which is basically children's fairy tale brought to life in a raucous way with a dodgy.
Yeah, the old panto.
That's right. It's for the family, which basically means that there's a lady in a nice dress for your mum to look at, and there's a handsome prince, and there's also a dodgy joke for your dad, and for the kids there's lots of shouting out, "He's behind you! He's behind you!" And the kids are shouting out, and they'll throw sweets into the crowd. And it's very interactive. It's usually the first theatre as a kid you go to at Christmas. You go to a pantomime somewhere. And they've recently, because we have Australian soap operas that are quite a big deal here, they bring in Australian soap stars to play some of the characters in British pantomimes at Christmas. And when I lived in Bournemouth, they brought in a bloke from the show Home and Away. I forget the actor's name, but the character's name is Alf. And his catchphrase on the thing is, ah, Flyman, what's the Flyman trouble with this Flyman, whatever? And Alf was appearing in the local pantomime. So we got the people who wrote the pantomime to write a scene for us to act out on the air one morning on the breakfast show as a promo to sell tickets for the panto. And they brought some of the cast in, including this fellow who was well known from TV, this Aussie guy, Alf. And he was lovely. And we acted out a scene that had been written for us live on the air. And I think went for like 3 minutes, but it was so much fun.
Yeah.
So much fun. Because you really had to go over the top with it, you know, to sell it. You couldn't, you know, because it was comedy as well, and it was raucous panto comedy. It was, you really could go, going too far was almost not far enough to make it work. You didn't have to really delve in or anything. You just had to, and it was very funny. It was written and it was outrageous. It had local references in it and stuff, which is something they do in pantos. It was really, really good. Yeah. Well, I can see how that could be fun. Yeah.
Oh, it yesterday was one of those days. Well, yeah, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it's sort of that, people who, your theory of people who retire have not monetized their hobby.
That's it. People who retire have failed to make money at their hobby, because once you can make money at your hobby, at what you enjoy, the thought of retiring is like, well, I found something I like doing. Why would I stop?
Yeah. Why would I stop this? Yesterday was just this was fun. It's work.
Yeah.
It was, and it's challenging, but it's so much fun.
Yeah. 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 That does sound like it.
I did it in pajamas.
And the coach didn't know.
Yeah. I've been watching a U.S. legal show, it's off the air, called Boston Legal.
Right.
Just watching it, downloaded it. And I thought the other day, because it's barristers and all this, and they have to buy the wardrobe.
Yeah.
They spend all their time in suits.
Yeah. Yeah. And TV is so frustrating. I told you about the TV commercial I made for my show at TFM, didn't I? It was a 30-second TV commercial. It took...
Yeah, that took 8 hours to film?
12 hours. I got there at 6 in the morning and left at 6 at night. It was a 12-hour shoot for 30 seconds. And we were literally redoing things because a light needed moving like half an inch. Like, it was just because they're so finicky with the pictures have to be perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of thing, that would frustrate me. It really would. Don't they say most of making movies is just hanging around?
It really is.
Yeah. Oh, they do it. Really don't. I bet that though, if we're talking about not memorizing stuff, I bet making a movie you don't have to memorize a hell of a lot. Because, you know, they don't do many scenes in a day. And you only have to memorize those scenes.
You only have to be ready on the day.
Yeah. Whereas a play, you have to know it. You have to know all your cues and everything. Well, for a movie, you go, what are we shooting on? Tuesday, we're shooting the barroom scene. Okay. And then you read all that. And then that's it. Then tomorrow, we're going to be shooting the scene in the saloon or whatever it turns out to be. We're doing the stuff in the house on that day.
All right. Fine. I'll get it. I'll get it the night before. Done.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, you could, couldn't you? I would have thought. Just get a couple of pages. Oh, you know, you don't have to know the whole thing. And you don't have to stand on the stage when your bit's not, when someone else's died. They will take you away. We're doing her close-up now. You don't even have to be there while they shoot some of the scene. Yeah. And they have stand-ins and everything, don't they? So,
we're going to light this now. You can just go sit in and we'll get your stand in.
Yeah.
Have a seat.
Yeah. We're going to block this one. We're going to work out what's that blocking they call it. So that's where they're working out where the cameras are going to go and stuff. You don't even need to be there for those bits.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny science?
Blocking it. I know it just from a theater. It's, It's where you're going to be standing at such and such a time.
Right.
So at this line, you're going to be here.
Yeah.
When you say this, you're going to cross or be here or do that. That's blocking where everyone's going to be standing.
Yeah.
In a scene.
I only know about that from listening to another great podcast, which is Hollywood and Levine by Ken Levine, who I met briefly, and I bet he doesn't remember me, at a Dan O'Day convention, actually, in Los Angeles. He was a writer on MASH and Cheers, Ken Levine, and he does a weekly podcast called Hollywood and Levine, and he often talks about the business and, you know, because he's directed a few. Did he direct a Cheers? He directed some sitcoms, and some of the stories he's got are just priceless. It's like one of them. They did a show. They shot it twice. They shot it for an early audience and for a late audience. So when they shot it the first time, the second time they picked up all the shots they'd missed, you know, all the close-ups and all the other things. So they basically performed the half-hour episode of this sitcom. I forget which one it was. They performed it twice. And the writers had written in a joke that was a bit dodgy. I think it was risque.
Yeah.
And he says, the way the network, the solution, because some people wanted, the writers wanted to put it in, and some people from the network said, look, it's just too edgy, you know, it won't play well in the Midwest and all the rest of it. The compromise they came up with was, we'll put it in the first shooting of the sitcom, and if it gets a laugh, we'll take it out of the second one. It's a great podcast, Hollywood and Levine by Ken Levine. And you do, it's different things each week. And like one week, it was a sitcom pilot that he'd written, and he got some actors to act it out in a studio somewhere, and they recorded it, and it comes over as like a radio play. And it was great. It was really, really good. It's about a vice president who took Viagra and ordered a hooker. It's just, it's good. I just like it. It's Hollywood and Levine with Ken Levine. But so check that out. Oh, well, that's good to hear the things are looking up then. It's always good to knowing that you're, what do they say? Sharpening the axe. Yeah, that always feels good.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we do some stuff?
Oh, hey. Since we're working.
By the way, as you know, I tape everything. I've taped what we've just done. I'm sure that'll make it onto an episode of London Calling. I reckon there's some good stuff in there. Just an insight into the voiceover world.
Ah, it's a great world to be in.
Yeah, right. So I just want to make sure you're okay with that. Fine. Just as long as you're fine with that. Yeah.
And it's it's one of those things. Oh. Everyone always says I have a great voice. How do I get into voice acting?
Yeah.
It's really showbiz. It's trying to get, if you're trying to get into the voiceover world, you are getting into show business.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Yeah. I bet. Yeah. I mean, the amount of out of work actors, and I'm sure the voiceover world is even a more specialized area of that, which is why six guys are doing all the movies. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it really is literally, it may not even be six, it's probably five.
Wow.
Do all the movie trailers.
Wow.
Scott Rummel. Ben Patrick Thompson, something like that.
Yeah.
It's literally a handful of people.
Wow.
You know, it used to be, Don LaFontaine.
Mm-hmm.
And, Hal Douglas.
Mm.
Were the big two. And then there was a few others. But Don LaFontaine and Hal Douglas have since died.
Mm.
And so there's two more people that just have moved up.
Mm.
But it's millions and millions of dollars that they make.
Wow.
A year. Wow. Oh.
For like 60-second reads. Wow.
Not even. It's all basically 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But it's all union work.
Yeah.
But it's all national.
Yeah.
The session fee is probably $800 or so.
Holy crap.
But the usage, just at the bottom end of the, just the scale for a national TV commercial.
Yeah.
The usage is $6,000 or $7,000.
Wow. Wow. For the same 30 seconds without doing any more work. Wow.
And for a 13-week cycle.
Wow. Yeah.
If they want to use it again, they pay you again without doing... There's no session fee.
Mm.
But it's the same usage again.
Yeah.
And then if you're... you know, if you are Don LaFontaine or Hal Douglas, it's overscale.
Yeah. Yeah. Each time.
So it's millions and millions of dollars a year.
Yeah. Well, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah. The problem is there's only 5 guys doing it.
Yeah. They're not going to be hanging up their headphones anytime soon.
No.
They literally have to die.
And I never wanted to, when I started this, I never wanted to be, of course you want to be one of the movie trailer guys. I never wanted to make, you know, $1 million a year. I just wanted to pay my bills, to be able to pay my bills.
Doing what you enjoy.
And, you know, put a bit away.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to do. Yeah. And that's what I'm doing. And it's just amazing. Oh, I love it. As you know exactly what I'm talking about, because exactly. You do the same thing.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Just great, isn't it? Yeah, almost criminal. It feels like, yeah.
you're paying me for this?
Yeah. That's, you know, I went to a convention in Vegas once, and a great bloke called Walter Sabo gave a speech, and he said, there are two dirty little secrets in radio. He says, the talent's dirty little secret is, we'll do this for free. So don't let the management know. He said, but the management have their other dirty little secret, is that if you've got a top-rating radio show, they're scared to lose you to somebody else. And these are the two things that are never spoken about in radio, these two dirty little secrets that each side has. Well, that's it for this one. Next time, my guest is Space Shuttle and International Space Station astronaut Terry Virts. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm @GrahamMack. If you want to hear more Mac Nuggets, check out my website, macmedia.co.uk, and subscribe to my Bob FM show on Apple Podcasts. Got a question or something to say? Send me an email. Put your phone number in the email. I might call you. I might Skype you on the show. My email address is graham@macmedia.co.uk, and you spell Graham like the cracker, Mac like the truck. Till next time. Ta-da.